You know, if I were to sit here and ruminate on the idea that blatant partisanship and such are ruining the ability to have any sort of discourse here in America politically, I'd be saying the same thing as every other conservative has already said, so I'm not going to do that. With this week's discussion, I simply have a question for anyone among the left that might be listening to us this week or watching us. Are we a nation of laws or a nation of feelings? Trump is doing away with Obama's executive amnesty. That is pretty much a done deal. And the former president threw out what I like to call an educated tantrum, meaning that he called Trump a big stupid doo-doo head meanie with a much more expansive vocabulary. Thing is, Obama made one error. He didn't make an argument for why his unlawful action was the right decision. It was all based on emotion. So I ask, are we a nation of laws or a nation of feelings? We'll be discussing the decision by Trump and what it could lead to, plus celebrities talking politics, and James Comey making the mistake of exonerating Hillary Clinton before investigations had properly begun. My name is Micah Curtis.
And I'm Alex Beltman, also known as the Hat Man.
And welcome to Micah and the Hat Man on politics. All right. Another day in lovely Texas for Micah. Today, broadcasting-ish, not really broadcasting, recording from my hotel room in Houston, Texas now. And I have to say, this city has some of the most confusing roads I've ever seen. It is very, very difficult to get around. But I haven't seen a whole lot of damage on my end because the catastrophe site that I work at is on the edge of the city, southern, like on the very southern tip. And the weird thing is that I've heard a ton of testimonials that are all terrible. So it's been unfortunate. The only thing I can really say is when I came into the city, I came in through a major highway that kind of goes through the center, and every single exit that goes into the city proper was closed off, all of them. You could not get in. Mm. So, and then I came in the day after the hurricane dissipated. So, whew, boy, absolute insanity. So, Hatman, how was your week?
Busy. Lots of work. That's about it. That, and I've been continuing reading Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook by Mark Bray. If any of you are following me on Twitter, that's at the Hat 2, by the way, if you're not following me on Twitter. I've been posting reactions to some things as I'm reading them. And, oh dear God, Micah, you remember the picture of how many flags I had in Mein Kampf, right?
Oh yeah.
I think I may actually beat that for the Antifa book, and it is maybe a fifth that size.
Dear God.
Yeah, there is a lot to parse through, but I'm still not done. Next week, I will probably, or by next week, I'll probably be finished with it, so expect a review at that time.
The question I have is this, is it basically just some Stalin didn't do nothing sort of thing, or
is it actually not.
Okay.
It's not really trying to exonerate Stalinism. Communism, socialism, Marxism, on the other hand, it kind of is. There is a storied history of Antifa being a brainchild of the communist, socialist, and anarchist movements of the early 1900s. Though the author actually straight up argues that fascism predates that by 50 or so years as the KKK, which I find an incredibly dubious claim. But I'm almost tempted to say that fascism, at least in its pure ideological form, arose as a sort of extremist counter to communism, since it sort of correlates with the October Revolution in Russia, the rise of fascism, that is.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if fascism was initially, I guess, conceptualized as anti-communism, which would make sense for anti-fascism to have such a strong overlap with communists and socialists.
Well, that's, I mean, that when you go back and you look at different fascist dictatorships, Pinochet, Hitler, Mussolini. Mm-hmm. They oftentimes prop themselves up as the counter to communism. If you want to,
oh yeah,
you know, if you want to fight communism, you have to give the power to me. You know, Pinochet more so than the others because he legitimately did hate the communists and would chuck them out of helicopters, which is still hilarious. But
well, Mussolini's black shirts also, before he really seized power in Italy, they would go around and kill communists almost exclusively. So it really does beg that question of fascism is more anti-communism than anything else. I mean, that doesn't make it okay, of course, as if I really needed to say that.
Yeah, but trying to link them to the KKK is a little silly because the KKK never really had a huge amount of government influence, not in the sense like the Third Reich or anything like that.
No,
there
no,
was never like a that. KKK government or KKK ruling.
Well, not on a major scale.
No,
the KKK managed to take over the city of Wilmington.
Yes, I do.
Where I went to college.
Yeah, that is true. But I'm talking about like an entire nation.
Yeah, no, never on a nationwide scale.
No, and it seems to me what he's asserting, and that's just not
which
true. I think that he's basically trying to change the definition of fascism to be any racist.
Well, racist ultranationalist, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which it's a little more than just that.
Well, and I haven't read the book yet, but my assumption would be that he'd be attempting to change the key definitions of a few phrases: fascism,
yeah,
racism, and then white supremacy, so that you can fit anybody who votes different than him into those categories, and thus justify violence against them.
Well, he tends to link fascism as just far right. So when he talks about like far right politics, most recent example that I remember was when he was talking about the rise of mainstream fascism, as he calls it, in Europe, which includes the anti-EU sentiments. Now, how in the hell is that in any way related to fascism?
No clue.
Yeah, so he's basically just moving the goalposts, you know, where it's convenient for him to do so.
Most likely. I'm not really surprised by this. Yeah. Only thing that I want to say before we get into the first major topic today is I do politics content from this channel, aside from the podcast, which will always be on YouTube and on iTunes, is actually going to start being uploaded to VidMe. We're going to be doing a bit of an experiment there. And we're kind of because talking podcasts on YouTube is sort of a non-starter at this point for anybody trying to get into it, I figured, why not go ahead and use VidMe as the alternative if that's what they're portraying themselves as? So my first politics-oriented video since the last few that I did a couple of months ago, called Why I'm a Race Traitor, is up by the time you guys are seeing this podcast. So go check it out on VidMe. Just go on a VidMe, type in Mind of Mike and see, you'll find me. All right, let's go ahead and get into the fun stuff, as if we haven't already. So, the Dream Act. Say goodbye. Because Trump is doing away with it. What he has decided to do is to kill it and rule it out of existence over the course of 6 months. Now, from the way it's been described, it's not a total we're getting rid of this thing either. Most of the people who are in on this particular act, if they have not committed a felony or anything along those lines, then there's a chance that they're not going to be deported.
Yeah, for the most part.
Yes.
Anyone who is still here under the DACA can reapply for eligibility before, I believe, October.
Mm-hmm.
And they will have their status renewed for the next 2 years.
Exactly.
So it's definitely not going away entirely, but they will stop accepting new applicants if they haven't already by sometime this month or next month.
Yes. And basically, if you have committed a crime, you're out, which makes sense. I would hope it would make sense, or at least it makes sense to me. I would like to think that it makes sense to more sane individuals, but we'll get to that. But there has been some backlash, and I think that the backlash is expected. I've been on Twitter, because of course I have, because I'm not very good at staying off social media, or at least Twitter. Twitter's addictive. But with this particular action, you know, I've seen some pretty goofy tweets. My favorite being by the rapper Common. Allow me to pull this up real quick. Do 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 do. And I did this in the midst of also making fun of both sides, because that's what I do. Okay, so Common went on a thread. He man-threaded. Uh-oh. He man-threaded. He's a sexist, according to Jezebel. Anyway, he says, ending the DACA is another example of hatred and bigotry that we the people will not stand for. We will not be silenced. We will win. I said, of course, I can't hear you over the sound of the law. And I issued a question to him. If Dreamers were Polish, would you feel the same way?
Hmm.
And that's an argument that that Adam Carolla makes all the time on his show, is that if he were complaining about Polish people taking over Los Angeles, we wouldn't be having this discussion at all. So I personally think that it's preposterous, but it hasn't stopped the rhetoric. Bernie Sanders.
Oh, here we go.
Listen to this statement. Trump's decision on the DACA is the ugliest and most cruel decision ever made by a president of the U.S. in the modern history of this country. Really, moron? I've been calling Bernie a retard lately. It's been my thing. Like, I will go onto his Twitter feed and I will just find the most retarded stuff I can find and just call him a retard and point out why he's a retard. Because he's a retard. He's an old... He should be in a nursing home. He's stupid. He has no business voting for laws in this country at all. Not to mention, he's a Stalin apologist. That makes it even worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, So let's think about this for a second. So this is worse than W holding back aid during Katrina, as long as he did. This is worse than Obama drone striking American citizens over in the Middle East that should have been brought in for a trial. That they have the right to, that we're supposed to protect. Just blows them up.
Worse than the Patriot Act.
There's the Patriot Act, is another, which opened up for the... Yeah, that's a Bush thing that carried on into Obama, and he made it even worse! So now we've got a huge surveillance state.
Worse than the IRS targeting conservative groups.
Well, Bernie, again, is big on the old communist tactics, so I don't think he cares.
Probably
not. But so let's go back a little further. What about the Japanese internment camps? I mean, I know Bernie talks up FDR on occasion. What about that?
I guess it also depends on whether or not he considers FDR a modern president.
True, but the point stands is that this hyperbole is disturbing. And, you know, it's like, okay.
Oh, to say the least.
Here's my question, and I asked this to Bernie Sanders or Rahm Emanuel or Common or any other leftist. Do you guys want another person to get shot? Because that's what's going to happen. Not saying that I want people to be shot. Let me clarify this. This kind of rhetoric led to a man trying to gun down a United States representative.
Or he actually did shoot the guy, but keep in mind, he was trying to gun down all of the Republican representatives there.
Exactly. So, if you keep phrasing everything like a war, eventually, some idiot or some crazy is going to get it in their head that this is a war, and then they will go and they will hurt someone. It doesn't matter right or left. We have seen both sides. We've seen more from the left than the right these days, considerably. Some would even argue that, what's-his-face who ran down a woman in Charlottesville, since he's a Nazi, is basically of the left. So it depends on how you see things. I'm a horseshoe theory guy, so I'm a little different. But nevertheless, this is not the worst thing that has happened. I'm not even of the opinion that it's bad. I think it's a half measure.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with Trump's base on this, because Trump's base is not 100% satisfied. Trump's base is basically build the wall. I want the wall too. So I can understand that. But there was a theory going around when this first happened, and then it has basically started to play out, is that Trump is using this as a bargaining chip, because there were Republican senators, and obviously Democrats, the entire Democratic base loved the Dream Act. Trump is basically saying, if you like your Dream Act, you can keep it. Sorry.
Oh man.
But he says that if you want this to be legal, you can legalize it. You can run it through Congress and pass a law on it. And if you pass the law, I will sign it. And that's what he's saying right now. I have a feeling that what this is going to end up with is they're not going to get a supermajority on it. Because a lot of Republicans are very opposed to this, especially the Freedom Caucus.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to end up happening is he's going to say, okay, you didn't get a supermajority on this. For this to go into law, I have to sign it. I will do so if you give me the border wall funding. And that's how it's starting to play out. So I'm kind of in a weird position, because I'm not quite sure why he is convinced that he won't get the votes for border wall funding unless he's using the Trump care, quote unquote, vote as a base for that. I don't know. I really don't know. I think that sadly we may have been put into a position where we have to negotiate these things, or try to find some sort of trade with the Democrats to get what needs to be done. And that perturbs me, given the current state of the Democrat Party's politics. But he did put together a defense. Here's what Trump had issued a statement on. He said, "As president, my highest duty is to defend the American people and the Constitution of the United States of America. At the same time, I do not favor punishing children, most of whom are now adults, for the actions of their parents. But we must also recognize that we are a nation of opportunity because we are a nation of laws." A lot of people who are looking back on the Trump campaign are comparing it to Rudy Giuliani's campaign for mayor of New York. You know, he was known as the law and order candidate, and Trump is sort of being, you know, the law and order guy. Because him and Giuliani go back years. So, when you look back on it, it makes sense. But anyway, he says here, "The legislative branch, not the executive branch, writes these laws. This is the bedrock of our constitutional system, which I took a solemn oath to preserve, protect, and defend. In June of 2012, President Obama bypassed Congress to give work permits, social security numbers, and federal benefits to approximately 800,000 illegal immigrants currently between the ages of 15 and 36. The typical recipients of this executive amnesty, known as DACA, are in their 20s. Legislation offering these same benefits has been introduced in Congress on numerous occasions and rejected each time."
But that's Dream Act he's referring to.
Yes. So it goes without saying that he is doing what he needs to be doing in regards to his job.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the whole narrative about being against the Dream Act is racist, being utterly preposterous.
Mm-hmm.
It's again, and this is not, and this is why I did my opening monologue the way that I did, is because there is no concrete argument to the idea that America is racist because they want legal immigration. A lot of people, and I know I'm using a weasel word there, but let me put it this way. A lot of legal immigrants that I have talked to, people who came here from another nation, they applied, they went through the long, arduous process of getting citizenship, they are here legally, and they wanted to become Americans. Do not like illegal immigrants. And they really don't like lawmakers ignoring them. Just the idea that anybody can walk over the border and just live here. You know, I think that sometimes us natural-born Americans tend to take for granted citizenship because we've always had it.
Mm.
I think that legal immigrants know exactly what sacrifices you have to make to get this nation. Oftentimes they're coming from nations where, you know, it's not in a good place. Last few people that I know personally that were legal immigrants to the United States, two of them were from the Congo, and then one was from Sweden. So the Congo is definitely not a good place to live. And Sweden has been turned to hell on earth. So, you know, they're very upset because they see America. They're like, yeah, if America, being an American is so much better than this, I will be an American in an instant. I want to know what I got to do. And they go out and they do it like an honest person. You know, and am I saying that the circumstances for every family that immigrates here illegally is necessarily nefarious? No, but there's a lot that are. There's been a giant wave of criminals that have come from south of the border, here illegally, that have harmed people all along the border states. It's been going on as far back as I can remember. So probably back in, since like 09, 010 is when I first started hearing about this stuff. And again, you spit in the face of everybody who came here legally.
There's nothing wrong
with saying if you want to be here, you have to follow the law. In any other nation, we're not asking Spain for open borders. We're not asking Zaire for open borders. We're asking this country for open borders, and I think that it's preposterous. I think that it makes a sense, especially when you consider the idea. And I know I'm just going on and on and on about this. When you consider the idea of oh my God, my brain just blanked on me. The process of adopting the culture. What's the word I'm looking for here? Not acclimatization.
Not appropriation.
Integration. Integrating into the nation. That's part of why nations with more stringent immigration policies you have to learn elements of the law. You have to understand the Constitution. Mm-hmm. One nation, and people don't know this, it has a different stance on people who are Jewish, for obvious reasons. But Israel, their integration process is not that different than America's. You have to go through classes. You have to get it. You have to start out with a green card or a work visa. You have to go through classes to become a citizen. You have to take courses. You have to do testing, the whole nine yards, to become a citizen there as well. You know, and they have a wall too. So, I am of the opinion that you have to be willing to integrate into the society, and I think that if you are coming in illegally, you're kind of playing your hand in regards to whether or not you plan to truly integrate into this nation, or if you're looking to make it your own country's experiment, but different this time. So, those are my thoughts on the topic. Hat, what do you think about this whole Dream Act thing?
Honestly, I think the best move that would satisfy the most people at this point is an old-fashioned compromise. Reform immigration, include the better elements or improvements of the DACA or Dream Act or whatever you want to compile it from, and include funds for the border wall in one comprehensive bill. Problem is, I don't think that the Democrats are going to go for this because they have proven time and time again that they do not want to cooperate. I mean, Republicans have sort of gone down that path too. But at the same time, if anything wants to get done, that's where we're going to have to go. We're going to have to sacrifice some things to get some things that we want. That's how it is. That's how it should be. But with the current state of gridlock, I doubt that's going to do much. And on top of that, there's likely going to be a whole lot of voter pressure for the Republicans to do something to help everyone who is still in the country by the DACA. I think it's like 750,000 people.
Yeah,
are currently affected by it. And the program will end completely in 6 months' time. So it's entirely possible that we may end up seeing some rushed out the door legislation before that deadline hits. That's going to be half-assed, sort of like the healthcare debacles that we've seen. Mm-hmm. Just BS pieces of legislation that they want just for the sake of having a win. But I don't know. if both parties can learn how to compromise on this thing, it won't be a sad end. But that's a big, big if.
Here's my question. Do you think that this gamble is more to get neoconservative Republicans onto the idea of voting for a border wall in the long run? Because I wonder if Trump thinks that, or Trump is more worried about, you know, Lindsey Graham and John McCain throwing a wrench into his plans again than he is like a Chuck Schumer or you know, Bernie Sanders.
Possibly, although I think at this point it's more trying to not entirely appease the Democrats for it, but at least present them with an opportunity to do something that they would be totally okay with. And I know that sounds kind of weird, but, you know, recently he worked out a deal with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi for a budget. And that's very unusual, and he's pissed off quite a bit of Republicans with that one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of wondering if this thing was meant to appease more Republicans or Democrats, although that seems kind of odd that the Democrats are the ones giving him the most backlash over this.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, it presents them with an opportunity to pass something in Congress, because also you have, you know, Republicans like Lindsey Graham, John McCain that have gone on record as saying, oh, this is terrible and inhumane. And they'll probably join with the Democrats on passing whatever they propose. It's odd, but it's a big gamble, really. It's not even that odd. It's just a massive, massive gamble, and I don't know if it's going to pay off for him in the long run.
I don't know if it will either. I don't know. Personally, I would just like to see some of these rhinos get primaried so we can actually get some actual law taken care of. But
We'll see what happens. I mean, 2018 is going to be a very, very interesting year.
Well, basically, we're going to find out whether or not Donald Trump was a fluke. If it really was Hillary Clinton being the worst candidate ever, or he really did truly redraw the map.
Hmm.
I actually lean towards the idea of him redrawing it. There's a song, and for you video game players, in the video game Fallout 3 called Anything Go- that you will hear on occasion called Anything Goes. And it's basically about the absurdity of life and like the silly things that go on in politics and the whole nine yards. It's a song from the 40s. So, but it's kind of what I sing to myself before I start these podcasts. Anything goes. Just seems to be the case. But I'm fine with it, because if nothing else, it keeps it from being predictable, thus making it more fun to report on. So, let's go ahead and move on. I think we've really hammered that as well as we can. So, we've talked at length about James Comey.
Oh, yes.
I'd like to think that, like, comprehensive-wise, in year one, the episode that we did on the firing of James Comey and everything about that, the Comey memo, which Alex here, you know, valiantly dove into and dissected all of it for us. I think, you know, we've done a pretty good job of looking over this. So if you want to get up to date, do not hesitate to go into the playlist over on YouTube. It's called Micah and the Hatman on Politics Year One, and just look up anything with Comey's name in it. And we will, you know, you'll get all the info you need to get you caught up to this point. So, just for you information junkies out there. For the Cliff Notes version, basically James Comey was the FBI director. He'd been the FBI director, I think, since the beginning, or since before George W. Bush had come into office.
I think he was appointed under Bush, if I'm not mistaken.
So, but it was around that time. He's been, you know, more than 10 years, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump fired him. And a lot of people on the right weren't against the firing whatsoever, because he really was not very good at his job. So the so where that puts us is this idea that a lot of people felt, ourselves included, that he went very light on Hillary Clinton, and he excused a couple of things that really there's no reason for him to excuse. The whole what happened with Huma Abedin, for example,
mm-hmm.
and just printing off email after email that's classified, and chalking that up to not knowing how to work emails and things like that. With any other human being on the planet Earth in the State Department, if they did that, they would have been arrested. But because it was Hillary Clinton, she got special treatment. And now we have found out that Comey, and this is oddly enough, we were just talking smack about Lindsey Graham. Now we got to talk good about him again. because Graham was one of the people who found this out during their investigation into Comey that's been going on, found out that he had planned to exonerate Hillary Clinton no matter what. So, this is obviously disturbing, because an FBI, we basically have an FBI director who put politics above law enforcement. And people are starting to call for an investigation into Comey again, and into the link between Comey and Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Which should be done, because this is mind-boggling. There should be a trial. You know, all of them should be put on trial just to get the truth out. Because what we have basically, you know, this is, it's mind-boggling to me, because I would think that there are people, or I would at least hope that there are people in this country that are willing to put the concept of law enforcement above political leanings. That your job goes before your opinions. I would like to think that there are people that exist that are like that in this world. But apparently James Comey is not one of them. That's my thoughts.
Yep. Seems like as far as the hard details go, James Comey decided, according to this report, in May or April or May of 2016, that he was going to exonerate Hillary Clinton. Now this comes well before the announcement that he was not going to recommend charges, which was July 5th of 2016. Interestingly enough, this also comes a couple months before Bill Clinton and Loretta Lynch met on the tarmac. That was June 29th of 2016. So very interesting as far as the timeline goes, especially considering that Comey did testify before Congress that he had made his decision shortly before the announcement. So he may have just put himself in significant legal jeopardy.
Well, he deserves to be there.
Oh, yes.
I mean, the amount of disgust that I have for this action, and I imagine it's just like anybody, because it seems like there was just, again, there was just this huge, Obama's Justice Department had decided from the get-go when it comes to Hillary Clinton, when it comes to any possible wrongdoing that might come of this, we are going to keep her away from any sort of prosecution.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Also, according to New York Post, the NSA offered the FBI those 30,000 lost private emails.
Mm-hmm.
And Comey turned them down.
Yep.
Huh. So, why?
Well, let me put down...
What's the theory on why?
Let me put on my Alex Jones hat for a minute.
Oh, lordy.
Not gonna rip my shirt off again. I promise. Though I've been working out, so it's not as bad as it was 2 weeks ago. But anyway, trying to get into the anger... Gay frogs! Blah! Anyway, I hate to go all conspiracy theorist, but Jon Stewart said it once on The Daily Show, is that there have been points over the last 8 years where the Democrats have given credence to conspiracy theorists because they've worked out of the playbook of being that freaking evil. And this is one of those situations, because they put all of their chips, the entire Democratic Party that were involved in government, all the way up from, you know, all the way throughout the Justice Department, said Hillary Clinton is the candidate. Thus, we need to keep her out of prison. We have to keep her away from the courts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, again, Democrats are collectivists these days. They are not individualists. They are collectivists. They think as a collective. They work as a collective. It's why when it comes to passing law, Democrats are so effective at screwing everything up, basically. And why Republicans are always on cleanup is because the Democrats, they work as one tandem unit. They have one narrative. They will push it. They will see if it works. If it doesn't work, then they cry. And then they wake up, and then they get back to pushing the next one that is just as evil, to be frank. So, with this, they believed beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was Hillary's time to be the president. They you know, it's like people say that, you know, Hillary Clinton was entitled to it. Everyone agreed with her. Well, you know, because so whether or not she felt entitled is moot when everyone agrees, you know. And they believed it so much that they were willing to ignore justice and ignore the precedent that they were setting for government in the future to get this woman elected and to stay in power. That is my theory. Is that... And here's the thing. I have a feeling that what's going to happen is there will be a special investigator who's brought into this, who's probably a shark, and he's going to look for somebody in the Obama administration to bring up on charges, and he'll have conclusive evidence of who that is. And this is just my prediction. I could be completely wrong on this. They've got him. They've got somebody within that administration, not a big fish, that has some charges, and he's going to go away for a long time. And whoever this investigator is, he says, look, I can keep you out of jail for a long amount of time. You can go see your family again at some point. Maybe I can put you on probation. We'll see. But you need to tell me how deep this goes. Reason being, so they can build a RICO case.
Hmm.
And a lot of people on the right, you know, Ben Shapiro, Mark Levin, and others have oftentimes thought that basically the Obama administration ran itself like the Chicago mob, which they kind of have. And if that is the case, basically you get one person on a felony, you could get the entire administration, run them as a criminal conspiracy. In which case, if they did that, it would be unprecedented. The question is whether or not anybody within the government has the spine to do it. Because when you think about this, this indicts the methods and the methodology and the ideas of an entire political party as corrupt. It's a scary thought when you think about it. But I'm a purist in a lot of ways. I'm an American purist. And I believe that if something is wrong in this country with the way things are done, it needs to be pointed out and it needs to be fixed. And if we have to indict an entire political party on it, I don't care. It's not about political affiliation at this point. It's about what's right. And that's my thoughts.
Are you sure you went full Alex Jones?
I kind of started in that one, then I kind of moved into Rush Limbaugh.
just a bit.
Me and my rousing speeches. Hashtag Micah for president. Anyway, do you have any thoughts in regards to how this might play out?
I really don't know. There would probably be renewed. Renewed calls for the investigation to be reopened, but I don't think it's really going to go anywhere. It's unfortunate, but
Dare I ask what leads you to that conclusion?
If this hypothetical fix is in, it is in very far. You would not be able to get her at this point. And I think the fact that Trump is also not aggressively pursuing this would actually help Hillary's chances in this as well. If Trump does decide to aggressively pursue, then it would be a bit of a different story. But even then, I don't have the confidence, simply because if Comey couldn't do it, then I don't know who would. It's like who would you be able to trust to bring her to justice?
Mattis.
Ha.
No, who I would kind of pick for to lead an investigation into this would probably be Trey Gowdy.
Yeah, well, that's not a bad choice. Certainly, what's his name?
Or he would handle the prosecution. So, I imagine they could probably find somebody who's a hawk that would be willing to dig into this.
What's his name who've been trying to prolong the investigations? Nunes, Devin Nunes. He's leaving soon anyway, so.
You gotta have somebody who's willing to take some heads.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I said, it requires a spine. All right. So let's go ahead and move on. Goodness. We got about 15 minutes before we gotta go ahead and close out. We don't have any questions this week. So for those of you who want longer Micah and the Hat Man, gotta ask you questions, man. Just a couple. Don't need a bunch. So you can send it to us on Twitter at MicahQ&A. We would greatly appreciate it. We definitely want to answer those. So let's go ahead and talk about celebrities real quick to kind of close out. So believe it or not, we finally have a celebrity that is leaving the country because of Trump. And it's Madonna, of all people. Though when I thought about it, I said to myself, she's probably the most likely to actually get up and leave. Because she's lived in other nations before. So, now it would be poetic if she was going to Argentina. If anybody out there gets what I just referenced, God bless you. But she's leaving for Portugal. But apparently she's working on a new film and will be writing music out there. So, well, good for her. I'm not exactly distraught over this. I kind of want all of them to leave. All of you can go to Portugal. Go be judgmental of our country over there.
How many celebrities said that they were actually going to leave and then reneged on their decisions?
All but her?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, it was just a consistent thing is that, oh, I'm leaving the country. No, it was a joke. I'm not laughing. So either it wasn't a joke or it wasn't funny. But given how some of you comedians aren't funny these days, Amy Schumer, I guess it could be that. And maybe I just missed it. I don't even know. I think that the insanity over Donald Trump has largely just been silly in regards to celebrities. Overblowing everything. Hashtag resist. Hashtag this. Hashtag that. Say shut up. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have more respect for the professor that hit a guy with the head with a bike lock than I do for you people.
Whoa. Dang.
Reason being is he actually did something. He actually got up and did something, or he actually did what he said he was going to do. It was wrong. But I'm big into put up or shut up. It's like, are you going to sit there and talk all day, or are you going to do it? If you're just going to sit there and talk, I'm just going to mute you. I don't care what you have to say. I'm just going to sit there and talk and yammer and act like you're going to beat somebody's butt. You know, no. Get up and do it, or shut up. It's that simple. And kudos to Madonna for actually doing it. Look, if you think that we are the worst country on earth, if you think we are freaking terrible, and you think that all these other nations are so much better than us, that their social experiment is so much better than ours, go, leave. Go ahead. I'm not going to shed tears over it.
Can't believe you're actually giving props to Madonna.
Well, here's the thing. I've always been of the opinion, if you don't love it, leave it, in regards to anything in life. If you do not like the way something is going and you do not have to tolerate it, don't. If you have the option to get up and leave, which most of these rich celebrities have the option to do it.
Yeah, much more so than the average citizen who says, I'm going to move to Canada if whoever I don't like becomes president.
Yeah, it's like Eddie Vedder said that about George W. Bush. Then he says it about Trump, you know, years later. I'm like, dude, just go. You got the money.
Should have been gone a long time ago.
Exactly. Get out. You and your Harry Potter. Pearl Jam sucks.
Oh, God. What have you done to me?
I could go into opera, man.
No, please. Yo, oh yeah. Oh my god.
And it's moving to Canada. Oh yeah.
I swear to God, I got Eeyore out of this.
Well, that's what Adam Sandler would do whenever he did his Eddie Vedder impersonation.
Oh my god!
I just wish I had the soundbite of the piano version of Even Flow, or else I would do that even more often. Because that's what me and just a real quick story is. Me and one of my best friends, we used to make fun of Pearl Jam all the time. because we hate him. And, like, Jeremy and Even Flow are just the easiest songs to make fun of because you, for half the song, you don't understand what Eddie Vedder is singing unless you actually sit there and listen to it. So, I have a cousin who's a big Pearl Jam fan. He begs me anytime I see him. He's like, please don't do the Opera Man thing. Like, damn it. Anyway. So, anybody who doesn't like Pearl Jam is going to love this episode. But anyway, I think that when you – here's what gets me is some people will say, oh, I do actually love this country. I just don't love the direction it's going in. Okay, then why is it that so many of you want to fundamentally change our governmental system? Or change the culture. Or change the principles. If what we're doing is actually great and you do actually love it, why would you want to change those sorts of things? It doesn't match up. You know, in a relationship. You're in a relationship, you're trying to reconcile something. Oftentimes when you're trying to reconcile something, something has gone very wrong, right? Meaning something has to change within that person. They have to make an effort to be something different. Which doesn't always work. You have come to the conclusion that the way things are right now just don't work at all, and it has to change. So, and you have fallen out of love in a way. So, if you are at a point where you think capitalism is evil, where you think that, you know, stringent immigration is terrible, and so on and so forth, it's like, leave! Go to the EU! Because that's sort of the leftist's perfect super government. That's what they think government is supposed to be. Is like the the European Union. It's like, go over there. They'll take you in a heartbeat. You can move to Germany. You can move to France. You know, or any of those EU nations. Not Britain anymore, because we love you Brits. Mm. But anyway, God save the Queen. But
I guess they think of it as like a temporary exile, while the anti-fascists or the anarchists or whatever conduct their revolution and overthrow the government and bring about a stateless post-capitalist utopia.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
There's a reason you don't see any Antifa marches here in Texas.
That's going to be a long exile for you. You're going to be waiting for the rest of your life. And beyond that.
I was actually having a discussion about that, just a quick aside, with somebody that I work with. Is like, because we were talking about, since I'm a security guard, about, you know, the big worry is that for as security, you know, we're guarding capitalist institutions, and Antifa doesn't like capitalism, so you never know when they're going to show up to protest your company, despite the fact that you're doing good. And I just said, I'm like, I don't expect them there to have any issues in an open carry state when they hate guns. So anyway, but here's some good news of a celebrity that's actually looking to help in a degree. Got this from over at BizPack Review. So Steve Harvey, who got called a mediocre Negro by Mark Lamont Hill, which, talk about like a like freaking, that's some Jared Taylor stuff right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like saying you're not a true Aryan, you know? But Steve Harvey is working with Ben Carson on the urban development project. Now, I don't know what he's going to do. I have a feeling he's probably going to help them on a PR level. But we'll see what happens there. But from what it says here is that Steve Harvey isn't going to let the vicious backlash get in his way of helping the Trump administration in its housing and urban development efforts. The game show host and comedian revealed in an interview with The Hollywood Reporter that he has met with HUD Secretary Dr. Ben Carson to discuss repurposing closed city schools into what he calls vision centers, teaching children STEM subjects and computer programming. Okay. That's awesome. That's necessary. And for a lot of reasons. If we're going to... There's an issue in Black America. Crime. There's an issue in Black America with a subculture that enables it. Both philosophically and through just normal attitudes towards criminality. And let me put it this way. When one of your most well-known professors, Michael Eric Dyson, is more known for a book on the rapper Nas than he is about any actual philosophical discussion, I think that says something about, you know, where the culture is there. It's like your priorities are way off, man. But Harvey said this. He says, I've been to HUD twice. I've met with Dr. Carson. We're actually trying to get it started. We've had meetings, and now we're just waiting on the final notes. We have several teams in place. Hopefully, before the year goes out, we'll be making the announcement about the first Vision Center. So, I'd like to say, this is kind of what we're looking for. You know? Is Steve Harvey, basically, when he went and talked to Trump, was basically given, or from his account, basically giving the concerns of the Black community in regards to the Trump administration to help out with education, to help out with law enforcement, both of which need to be done for these communities to rebuild themselves. Because, let me put it this way. Talk to any Black man who's 50 years or older these days. Mm-hmm. And ask him about how it used to be before the major crimes, before Black Lives Matter, before all this other crap. And he'll tell you, it was way different. You knew the cops on your block. Didn't matter what skin color they were. You knew who they were because they came and they talked to everybody. So the people would know who they are. It used to be better than this. And then policies came through, and people started to ignore the criminal element for race reasons as opposed to wanting it enforced for community reasons. And everything just started falling apart from there. So, Steve Harvey's one of those guys who knows that it used to be better than this. And that's one thing that I like to hear from people, that they're willing to say it used to be better than this. Because, and my Race Traitor video goes into this, is there was a point before all of this stress where we were united. We were Americans. And thankfully, the response to Hurricane Harvey has shown that there is still that spirit out there. It's not dead at all.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people out there where being an American matters more than being white, black, purple, whatever.
Hmm.
Which I now identify as purple. Did I tell you about this?
I don't believe you had.
Yes, I now identify as purple. So now I am a person of color. So my opinion is valid. In fact, I'm the only purple person in the United States. Never mind that I'm a pasty peach. I'm actually purple. Your eyes just don't work right.
So you're a plum?
Yes.
Weirdo.
Mm.
Oh, wait, does that make me racist?
Yes.
Swear words.
I now require victim bucks. From you and from everyone else. Speaking of which, as we close this episode out, we do want to thank all of our patrons for supplying us with the victim bucks. No, for helping us. All funds in regards to the Patreon are going to start to be basically moved towards buying the equipment for the eventual studio that we have in North Carolina. So, that's awesome. Another thing is that if you are an aspiring artist, I would actually like to hear from you. Please go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/user/CynicsCorner, CynicsCorner, all one word, and go to the about page and look at my business email. If you are an aspiring artist, I want to see your work. Reason being is that I am interested in paying you to do a bit of work for this channel on a couple of things. First is to help with graphics for future videos for us. And second thing, also, if I think you've got the chops, possibly even partnering on a t-shirt project when we hit 40,000 or so subscribers here in the next year or so, or two, depending on how long it takes us. So that's definitely things to look out for. Of course, we want to thank everybody who's supporting us. If you would, please do consider becoming a patron today. Just look up Patreon, Micah Curtis. That's where you can help us out with. There are benefits to that, of course. You know, any donation per month gets you early access to videos. On top of that, you also get access to the channel's Discord server, in which case, you know, a few times a month we'll get in there, or really sometimes we'll even, you know, or at least I'm going to start getting in there casually just to chat with people, just to kind of get the lay of the land and see what you guys are thinking about things. So that's basically all I have for announcements as we close this one out. Hat, do you have any final words?
Yes, actually. Hurricane Irma is on its way, and by the time that you guys are hearing this, it'll probably have already made landfall in the United States. Well, in the continental United States. It's, I believe, already hammering Puerto Rico. But please, if you are along the eastern seaboard, please stay safe. Keep watch. Hurricanes are definitely not something to take lightly, and I'll be having to prepare myself because in all likelihood it's going to affect my area of North Carolina. So praying for all you guys out there, and if you also want to help relief efforts with Harvey and the inevitable relief efforts with Irma, please do some research for a decent charity that you can contribute to.
Absolutely.
Financial contributions. I'm hearing reports that places don't need clothes anymore. That seems to be the big donation thing right now. And finances can go to many, many different things. So if you feel led to and you have the financial backing too, please consider making a donation to help with relief efforts.
Agreed. All right, folks. Well, we appreciate you guys tuning in. I one last thing is I do apologize that we can't do these live while I'm out here on the road, and it looks like with these hurricanes going on, I'm probably going to be on the road for a couple of months. But I do look forward, and this is the only time I've ever said it, I do look forward to getting back to Illinois in the future, if for no other reason than to get, you know, do these live again. So, with all that said, my name is Micah Curtis.
And I'm Alex Baldwin, also known as the Hat Man.
And we will see you guys next week.
Deus Vult.
Deus Vult.